It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Ten o'clock Saturday morning. You know where we are. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I'm Austin Danforth, your usual pilot here. Jeff Paul, he's out on assignment again this week with the Lake Show. Colchester High School girls soccer opening up their season today against Rutland. I think they just kicked off, actually. So to my right, riding my co-pilot this morning for your flight is my brother in arms from the Burlington Free Press, Alex Abrami. Alex, how you feeling?
Considering it's 10 a.m. and we worked until after 1 a.m. last night, I'm feeling pretty good because I'm on my third cup of coffee.
The Friday nights in the fall into Saturday mornings remind you of what burning the candle at both ends feels like when you're in our profession. I'd almost forgotten.
On the plus side, it was beautiful out last night. It's another great day today. So it's to be outside and for your job this time of year, that's not a bad gig.
You might want to take that statement back in 2 weeks.
I'm saying right now.
Yeah, right now, this moment, this second, this weekend.
It's still August.
Actually, Aaron, can we take the show outside this morning? Because it is nothing short of delightful.
I really wish we could. It's gorgeous out there. I was standing in the lobby of the studio looking out the window like, oh man, I wish I was out there.
I was doing the math on the way in. I look up, the sky is perfect. The breeze is perfect. Car says it's 64 degrees. I'm like, that feels about right. In Vermont, we probably get, I don't really know because I'm not up and outside at 8 or 9 a.m. I'm guessing we get like 8 or 9 of these days where like the atmosphere just wants to hug you. The air is just kissing your face and it's fantastic. And I bet I get 2 of them. So I'm really savoring this one. So if there's any way you can figure out how to get us outside by the end of the show, I would appreciate it. In the meantime, today we'll be leaning into the start of Vermont high school football season, kicked off last night. Alex and I will be talking about that throughout the show. We'll have Middlebury High School football coach Dennis Smith on at 10:20. The Tigers, who Alex put number one in his preseason power rankings, they opened up with a 34-14 win over Fairhaven last night, so they're off and running. And also, Alex, and something I think we can sort of open up for folks that want to chime in throughout the show. And if you want to connect with us, either text or call 802-655-6672. UVM news that was really inevitable. It was just a case of when, not, you know, if. And that's retiring the numbers of number 22 and number 11, Taylor Coppenrath and TJ Sorrentine.
Yeah, I think it boiled down to timing on getting TJ here, considering he's the associate head coach at Brown.
Which for me, it's just like, how do you not make that happen? I like pick him up as a non-leaguer. I don't know. Like, how do you like it? Anytime coaching staffs have like shared allegiances, I don't know why they don't just play each other. So I'm sure
I don't have the answer for that one. It just took a long time. So it's basically 15 years after they last played. And they were inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame together with Coach Brennan I guess that's 5 years ago now.
Yeah, it was as soon as possible, which I believe is 10 years after the fact.
Yeah. So that's going to be, you know, that's a reason to go to an exhibition game if you're a UVM fan. And I think you tweeted out when we posted the story a few days ago that that's a lock for a sellout.
No, oh, if they don't sell that out, that's going to be the upset of the year. and the amazing thing, among the many amazing things that duo did at UVM, they, as seniors, sold out every home game.
Yeah.
Every game, 32-66 at Patrick Gym.
Yeah, it was the must-see ticket all winter long.
And it, like, as we know, it had been building for years. start that 5-year span where they were on campus. First year, TJ Sorrentin lights it up as Rookie of the Year in America East. Second year, he's Player of the Year, and Coppenrath is Rookie of the Year after the red shirt. Then TJ gets hurt. Taylor gets Player of the Year for 3 years running, which is pretty special. And those 3 years happen to be, you know, the famous three-peat in America East that culminated with the Syracuse game and the shot from the parking lot. So as we maybe dip in and out of this subject throughout the show, feel free to call in with your favorite memory of watching Taylor Coppenrath or TJ Sorrentin or both, or you know, anything like that. I know the guys on the huddle this week had Coach Brennan on to regale everybody with as only he can do. I think there was one story about, you know, before senior night, Taylor pulls Coach aside and wanted to, Coach thought he was going to get some sort of emotional thing, and it was just Taylor telling him, "Coach, I don't feel good." Okay. That's a pretty typical Taylor. I guess you could just throw a dart at the calendar, and if this week was the week they announced it, that's cool. But they will do so before the exhibition against Brown. I think it's October 26th.
Correct, and that's Saturday night.
Saturday night,
7 p.m.
And the cool thing about that, and I guess, I mean, that they're like, usually you have to get a special waiver for a exhibition against a Division I opponent, which is a new thing, but they give the ticket sales to charity. So I think it's the Vermont Disaster Relief Fund.
Correct.
So that's a good cause for folks that, paying for a glorified scrimmage might seem a little weird, but it's for a good cause. And if you can get, 3,000 tickets for a good cause, I think everybody's winning at that point.
Now, I want to know, are they going to do the ceremony before the game? Or are they going to do it at halftime?
Got to do it before.
Okay. I don't know, because the release didn't specify exactly when they were going to do it.
I bet they haven't worked out those logistics yet. I mean, they do have 2 months to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think it was.
I can almost see them doing it at halftime, though, to keep people in the stands.
Meh. It's a Division I game. I mean, and there's a lot that you get all the new guys coming in for UVM, the transfers, the freshmen.
Right. It's the first look at this team.
Right. And
they
it's
play
not,
an exhibition. The
it
next
probably won't be a blowout, which, I mean, like, frankly, like if they play St. Michael's and it gets away from them, or, you know, pick whatever exhibition they might play, playing a Division I team, it probably should be a little more respectable. But I think you do it before, because you're going to need some time to let that breathe. That's a pretty special thing. You don't want to shoehorn that in.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, in a 15-minute halftime, or even if you expand it to 20, that's, you know, that people do need to get up and go to the bathroom and stuff, as we know from where we sit courtside, and we can't escape at halftime.
All right, you sold me. So it's before the game.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. So that's coming up. I think that the easy answer for, you know, favorite memory would probably be, I mean, from the parking lot. I mean,
that's everyone's first, right? You got to go there.
It's sort of first with the bullet, and you sort of, so we could say favorite moment of Taylor Coppenrath and TJ Sorrentin's career in the non-Syracuse division. Non-Syracuse memory. Because God, that was a fun run. I was my freshman year was their senior year. Got to see all those games, and that was one of the reasons I went to UVM. I mean, all the financial stuff worked out, but it was like the kicker was, I get to watch those guys all winter, and I don't have to pay, and I get like I can get a seat every time, and it's gonna be because I'd followed them like from, you know, where I grew up in Castleton, and you follow them, and it's cool. Like, hey, Vermont is winning. This is new. This is fun. So that when I realized I could follow those guys one more time, that was sort of the ultimate. Anything come to your mind right at the top of your head, Alex?
So I was at St. Mike's during that time. I graduated in 2004. But I went to, my friend got tickets to the championship game in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time I saw them in person. And I was blown away by the atmosphere And then the result, I mean, they ended up pounding I think it was Northeastern.
It was a borderline laugher.
And what was obviously the takeaway or the early takeaway in that game was the fight that, you know, the skirmish that broke out.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know what time that was in the first half, but like, you know, you don't utter JJ Barea's name around here without anyone, you know, raising an eyebrow.
He's not longtime NBA pro and world champion with the Mavericks or whatever, JJ Barea. He's the dude from Northeastern who punched Martin Klemesh in the face, JJ Barea.
Yeah.
It didn't get called for the foul. Well,
no, but so that stands out because just to see like UVM do it again, kind of like, yeah, the Syracuse was coming the next week, but to see them kind of stamp the three-peat on their home floor, Taylor was amazing in that game. And just everyone getting, I mean, you see this all the time when a team wins on their home court in a championship game, they all, you know, all the fans get on the court.
I don't know if there was a court storming quite like that.
One was, we have a couple of pictures in the archives, I think, of that.
And it's like half the gym is on the court.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty sedate. Like they sort of funnel people in from one corner so it's not overrun, which it makes sense safety-wise.
I think when UVM beat Albany in 17, I think that had a,
that was close because they'd waited for a while.
Yeah.
That was close. You're right. So, yeah, we've dipped our toe in that water, you know, Coppenrath and Sorrentine. So, if you want to chime in at any point throughout the show, you can reach us text or call 802-655-6672. Aaron, what are we looking at for today's poll question?
All right, so today's Green City Garage poll question brought to you by Green City Garage. You can find them at 802-651-9299 at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, 05403. At Green City Garage, vt@gmail.com or at www.greencitygarage.com. Poll question for this week, who should the Red Sox pay? JD Martinez, Mookie Betts, both or neither? You can find that at 101.3 The Game on Twitter.
Okay. I think we talked about this briefly last week. It's sort of been an ongoing conversation as the Sox have not surged closer to playoff contention. You're the Red Sox. Pay them both. You're going to take whoever's money fills the seats anyway, so just pay them both. Keep everybody happy. Keep everybody fat and happy. Let's go.
I think that's fair. I think Mookie, with the way arbitration goes, it's likely he's not going to be getting like a Mike Trout kind of contract. Although if you fight him too much, he may not want to play in Boston anymore, and that could be unfortunate. JD Martinez, obviously, there's a ceiling for both of them, I think, where once it gets to a certain point, it feels a little ridiculous to pay them. But yeah, the Red Sox can do it.
That's true for anybody in any job anywhere.
Yeah. I don't think either of them are going to be asking for that kind of contract, though. I mean, JD's last contract was big, but it wasn't so big. It was ridiculous. And again, like Mookie's in an arbitration year, so it's not going to be $400 million over 10 years.
Right. I mean, you should have seen Jeff's face when he asked if I wanted to co-host with him, and I said, cool, $1,000 a show, let's go. Which isn't the case, obviously. And folks can go to the 101.3 The Game Twitter and weigh in on how they feel about that.
And Price is getting, what, $30 million a year? So
is he really?
I believe so.
God, that's bad money.
Yeah, the way we're paying our pitchers, I think the offensive guys deserve a pretty good paycheck.
Yes. Yeah.
They're doing the most of the work.
So David Price feels like he's been around forever, and I think he's maybe a half a year older than I am. But he feels like he's been in the twilight of his career for like the last 4 years because he threw so many innings and so many pitches, you know, the first 8 years of his career. It's like, and he was great, but geez, if he didn't, like, you were watching him get worn out in real time.
Yeah, so Price is making $31 million this year, $32 million next year, and then $32 million for the 2 years after that.
Pay him, keep paying him. Keep paying
Says the Yankee fan. Yeah. That's the arms race that the Sox and the Yankees and, you know, the Cubs and the Dodgers have put themselves in. There are only so many good pitchers, and you just have to take one so the other people don't have them. Because in the off chance that they do exceptionally well for whatever that contract period of time is, you can't afford to have them play for the other team.
You want to see some, hear some other contract gems? Chris Sale's only getting $15 million this year, but he's getting $30 million for the next 3 years. And then Rick Porcello is making $21 million for this garbage season he's had. So when you're paying the pitchers like that, I think it's fair to say dig deep into the pockets for JD and Mookie, because they are two dynamite players.
Yeah, and as our boy Brady points out on the Twitter line, JD does have a player option, and Mookie is under contract for next year. So do they pay him? Do they trade him? Because like, they won't let him walk for nothing.
Yeah, it seems unlikely JD will opt in, but if he did, that's not at all an unreasonable salary to pay him.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, that was segment one this morning. We've achieved liftoff. We're pretty much at our cruising altitude for the morning show. Coming up after this, we'll be talking to Middlebury High School football coach Dennis Smith. Tigers opened up week one in pretty stylish fashion. They were up 34-0 with about 5 minutes to go in the second quarter, which, if you've heard that, if that sounds like a recent Tigers game in the last decade, that's because it was. The game unfolded, it was being described back to me. I was like, yeah, I've heard this script before. So we'll get a read on the Tigers coming up after this. Don't go anywhere.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
It is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. And Alex, last night was first night of Vermont High School football. Scores from around the state. You were at the Burlington South Burlington game. Your story is up on the Free Press website right now. BBA 35-7 winners there at Buckhard Field. I was in Milton, where Colchester beat the Yellow Jackets 21-0. Elsewhere, we had Brattleboro, the new D2 team. They beat Bellows Falls 49-26. Linden ran past Woodstock 52-16. Mount Anthony swept up Spalding 38-0. U32 blasted North Country 60-33. And Springfield beat Mill River 40-14. The other game of the night, and the reason we have our guest on now, Middlebury beat Fairhaven 34-14. And the first thing I want to ask Middlebury coach Dennis Smith is, how uncomfortable were you when you saw our boy Alex Abrami put your Tigers number one in his preseason power rankings?
That's not good, because usually when he picks us, things don't go right. So long running joke with him that I'm happy when he's picking the other team.
It's true. I think that's, you know, unfortunately, I've been unlucky for Dennis's Tigers over the years.
Yeah. I will second that.
On the other hand, when I pick them, things seem to go well. So
correct. Yeah, I'm glad to have you show up.
Yeah, and I think the plan is for me to be there next week when you guys are up this way.
Yep.
So you can rest easy this week. Alex puts you number one in the rankings, and then you guys got off to a pretty flying start last night, by the sounds of it. Did you like what you saw from your top unit there in that first half against Fairhaven?
I did. We really came, you know, that's not usual for us coming out of the gate and putting points on the board that quickly. Usually we take a couple series to kind of settle in, but last night, right from the start, the offense was clicking. We got four new linemen that really, I just was watching the first half of our game here and then just started to watching last night's Burton game. But our line did a pretty good job last night, I felt, and especially watching them on film. So I was very happy with what I'm seeing so far.
And to folks that may not have devoured all of our preseason material at the Free Press, how would you describe the group you're working with this year?
Athletic-wise, it's, you know, right up there with some of the other teams that some of my better teams that I've had back in 13 and 14. In terms of, you know, I got a returning quarterback for a second year. I got my backfield pretty much back, and all my skill positions are good, fast athletes. You know, the question going into the season was, is our offensive line going to be able to gel? And we're getting better and better each practice, and we're doing more talking, and it seems to be working out well. And defensively, I think we're going to fly to the ball and we got people that are going to make plays even when they make mistakes.
I know Fairhaven, you know, transitional year a little bit with a new coach who's been around the block, of course, and they have a new quarterback and some other skill guys that are new. But from your perspective defensively, what did you like out of your group to able to pretty much shut them out until at some point in the second half?
You know, I just watched the first half of the game, and watching my D linemen, were two out of three guys are new up there. You know, my ends are back from last year, my backers, and three out of four in the secondary. So I knew the skilled positions were going to be all set. It was just a matter of we got to find a couple guys, and so far we did. One got dinged up last night, Tarik Connell with his ankle. We'll see where that leads us. But just seeing the two big guys up front holding their own, so that's going to help. And then with our younger guys getting some playing time last night, you know, we'll be able to break some things down with them and get them up to speed.
Bringing back as much as you guys did as a coaching staff, what does that free you up to do differently, say, compared to last year when you were maybe introducing a lot of these guys into the lineup?
Well, it's a little different actually for us this year too, because, you know, our numbers are down for us. You know, we've got 58 in the program, so we've got seven sophomores with us that we're trying to catch up to speed, and actually one freshman. So yeah, our experienced guys, you know, they're ready to keep going, but we kind of got to keep it at a slow pace and bring them up to speed. And the juniors and seniors that have been with us are doing a great job helping them out. You know, we're missing some assignments as younger guys. But like you say, you know, when you got these experienced guys, the nice thing is they can help the younger guys, so we can try to go at a faster clip. But, you know, I think in a couple weeks we'll have a lot of, that we want to have in offensively and defensively all in.
So this is more of an overarching question about football in the state in general, but you see when a team like Rice has to forfeit because of low numbers, and you say you're on the lower end in terms of overall numbers in your program, but you guys have this great feeder program where it's all flag at the youth level, and I believe you just play against each other. You're not part of a league.
Correct.
Is that, you know, we, Austin and I did these stories last year when we looked at the state of football in Vermont. But in your view, is that the way to go, the way you guys are running things? And you've done it that way for decades now.
It's been 40, 50 years that this has been going on here. It's, you know, I did it when I played here. And I just think, we got 22 freshmen in our program this year. And for a school our size, that's half the size of the two schools we're going to go compete against, the Seawolves, next week. And we're bringing 22 freshmen, and I don't even know what they're bringing between the two of them, six, eight. Yes, I think it's the way it should be and should go. We're too worried about teaching these kids how to play the game for the high school level. Let's just make it fun, and that's what we do here. It's a seven-week program. After the first week of their practices, we haven't even started our flag football program yet. We'll have sign up this coming week. They'll do a test in next week at the college, which the coaches up there help us do. We evaluate the kids, and then we select our teams. We have a week of practice. We scrimmage, and then it's a 6-week schedule. 2 weeks, 2 days a week, they practice, and then we play in house on Saturday morning right at the high school. I don't know. We keep talking to other people, and they keep asking what we're doing and how we do it. But the South is starting to change. The North is still doing what they're doing.
And as you were describing the schedule, the father of a fifth grader across the seat from me here smiles as you and I think that schedule you guys have down there, where it's 2 days of practice and a day of games, and yep, your season hasn't even started yet. I know Alex's son's preseason started a couple weeks ago for the youth football up here.
Yeah,
it's a pretty manageable time commitment for you guys down there, and it doesn't seem overbearing at all, which I got to think for parents is as attractive as the product that you guys put out.
The proof's in the pudding, and yes, I am spoiled here because Middlebury loves football, but it's also, I do think it's the way we do it. I mean, like you said, the kids up north, they've been practicing. Some of those guys start before I can start and or have more practices than I can have. So you're putting a burden on the parents. So now you got a fight with the parents and then with the kids, you know. So you got somebody in between. I don't know. We keep going to places that want to talk to us about what we're doing. We're willing to help. This is how we do it. You know, everybody hates change. It's a hard thing to do. But once it's implemented, you know, like you guys are hearing me say, it's 3 days a week. You know, at my practice on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there are 100 kids running around at 5 o'clock because all the kids come down and practice on our fields. So it's kind of crazy down there, but it's just great to see these kids having fun. And there's only 10 kids on a team playing 8-man football. Every kid's getting playing time. You know, and it's $40 per kid also. Let me just throw that in. You know, it's cheap. It's less time. And when the kids are done, they want more.
We're talking to Middlebury High School football coach Dennis Smith on 101.3 The Game. And so you got past week one. That's behind you. How are you guys approaching the rest of the season? What sort of goals do you guys have for this group?
I'm no different now than I was, you know, 10, 11 years ago when I took over. It's day-to-day, week-to-week. So, you know, as I told the boys, enjoy this one, but come Sunday when we get together and have our team meeting and get ready for the next one, you know, enjoy the win now, and then come Sunday night, it's on to, you know, the Seawolves, and let's start preparing for that. You know, my only goal for my team is just get in the playoffs, and then it's a new season, and we'll reevaluate our goals from there. But don't be looking way down the road, because that's a long ways away.
If you had to pick a team, not yourself, who's another favorite?
You know, the usuals. I think St. Johnsbury is going to be up there. You know, it's week one, so I haven't really seen what the other teams have. You know, just like the other teams haven't seen me until now, and things start coming out on film and you start knowing more. You know, preseason, nobody's going to show anything if they have something anyways. But every team's pretty much the same. There's a few new tricks here and there. But I think St. Johnsbury's up there. You know, Rutland will be tough as usual. Other than that, you know, BFA, I'm hearing some things up that way too. So who knows? It's a long season, and it doesn't matter what division you're in, you know, two injuries will change anybody's season.
And the last night's game was being relayed to me with the exploits of your two of your backfield stars there, to your quarterback Tim Gettleman and the running back there Tyler Buxton. I had to say it sounded an awful lot like, you know, the teams that people got to know 4 or 5 years ago. As you watch it unfold on the sidelines, do you have sort of the same reaction, or are you too concerned about the minutia out there on the field, the X's and O's, what the guys are doing in front of the guys, or how players are doing their specific jobs?
I mean, you know, we got the athletes. I'm not going to, you know, downplay that. And I got some good backup athletes too. You know, CJ Bryant goes from fullback last year to a backup halfback right now. But he's, you know, he's a full-time defensive end that will create havoc. So yeah, athletic-wise, I think we can stay with anybody. But you know, it's keeping us grounded to understand that we got to be better each and every week, and there's more things to work on. So I guess it's just in my DNA. You know, I'm never going to look ahead, because I do know that certain things can happen in a heartbeat. You know, for us, it could be a kid ineligible come playoff time because of our grading system here. So you're fighting a lot of different things, and you know, just enjoy what you have right now, because you know, as we all know, one play and we could be down a big player.
My last question, Dennis, is among those things you can enjoy, is that chocolate milk dispenser still working in the coach's office?
Well, that's funny you say that, because no, we just took it out.
Oh.
We actually got some contests going on in the coach's office about, you know, losing a little weight here and there. So, and my son turned me on to the seltzer. So seltzer's the big drink now. we do have half gallons in there. You know, Monument Farms chocolate milk is still brought in by Pete James, who's one of, you know, he runs the business, and he brings it in every day, but it's not getting drank as much as it used to be.
Okay, because that was the revelation for me last year. I didn't even know that existed. This old school chocolate milk dispenser in the coach's office. It tasted great. I don't know if I've had a glass of chocolate milk that tasted that good in a long time.
Well, stop by. We still have some in the fridge.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll hold you to that. Middlebury Tigers coach Dennis Smith. Thanks for joining us, Dennis.
Thank you.
And that's no joke. The one of the assistant coaches, Pete James, runs Monument Farms Dairy, which is up in Weybridge, you know, just up the road from Middlebury. And it couldn't be more Addison County than that, where, you know, the cows from up the road bring the chocolate milk that fuels the football team. So this Gettleman and Buxton combination, it's very early.
Very early.
Very early, as Dennis just pointed out multiple times. But, you know, the potential is there to see sort of what we saw a few years back with Austin Robinson and Bobby Ritter and co, Cullen Hathaway, those guys that, you know, led them to, you know, two state championships in a row. And then sort of the next generation got them back there again before they fell to Rutland. But Alex's early preseason favorite, Middlebury Tigers, off and running. And when we come back, I think we have a little more high school football we can break down here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
We're back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. And Alex Abrami, filling in for me, who's filling in for Jeff Paul or something. Something like that here on 101.3 The Game. Dennis Smith, I always get a kick out of talking to Dennis. It might be because I caught him, you know, in the Tigers on the up and up. I covered that first game of that 2013 season that turned into a 32-game winning streak.
And I believe you covered the end of that streak as well.
I covered all three championship games in that streak. The two wins and then the loss. And honestly, other than the smile on his face after the two wins, he really wasn't any different a guy. So I think you find year in and year out what the Tigers do there down there in Middlebury. The system really doesn't change, as we were talking about with Aaron before the show. The names and the faces change. When they got the athletes when they got the studs, those 6-win teams become 11-win teams. But even you take teams that don't have studs, they struggle to get 5 or 6 wins anyway. So the job they do in Middlebury, I don't think there's a coaching staff around that would disrespect the job that they do with the Tigers.
No, I think that's the first thing other people say.
Like, I think they maximize the talent they have, whether it's the combination of the instruction and then the system and the way everything's set up down there. They're always in the mix. I mean, you could look. I think as we were going through our teams of the decade a couple weeks ago for the Free Press, you look, they were in the 2011 or 2010 D2 championship. Then they were in the 2011 D1 championship. They were in the 2012 D1 semis. They were in the D1 championship game in 13, 14, and 15. And they've been basically 5-win teams the last 3 years since then. So they got it figured out.
Yeah, the other piece too is they get better in the second half of seasons, usually, typically.
Correct.
And you got to give credit to the players, but it's also the coaching and getting them in the right position. And they also don't beat themselves for the most part.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do when you're talking about 16 to 18 year olds.
And when they have the athletes, like those great Austin Robinson led teams, they would routinely score from like 50, 60, 70 yards away. Like, they'd get two plays into a drive, whoop, 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 and then a counter the other way, and they're gone.
And that's the other thing too about those teams. They kind of tweaked their offense.
Those years. That was the change before 2013. Middlebury for decades has been a triple option running first approach to having the football. And that year in 2013, they went no huddle. And They had the athletes, and so it was just about tempo and making it happen and not giving the other team time to rest. And as Dennis explained to me back then, part of it too is just, you know, adapting the program for the way kids today process stuff. If they're like, you give them time in the huddle and then they're sort of less engaged, but if they start moving, they run a play, they get up to the ball, they look to the sideline, get the signal, run the play, get up to the ball, look to the sideline, get the signal, run the play. Like, they're not wasting time between snaps. The kids are constantly engaged. They have to keep moving. You can't lapse your attention span because you don't have time. Like, there's no downtime the way they play football. And it seemed sort of like, on top of being tactically great for the players they had, it was like sort of great on the back end too.
And that made it soul crushing for the other team when you're giving up touchdowns in one, two, or three plays multiple times in the first half.
Right.
You're done.
Until, I think, both those championship years, until the championship game, they hadn't, I don't think they ran a scoring drive that was like more than eight plays. Most of them were in that like 3 to 6 play sweet spot where it's like short gain, big gainer, short gain, gone. Like, and it was clockwork. So they probably had running time in more games than not because they got up by 5 touchdowns and, you know, they were not getting caught.
They were known for not making mistakes, as you say. They still are. That's sort of their MO. They were a team where when you huddle after the game as a team, and usually the coach will rip people for making one mistake or the other or doing things wrong. And Middlebury was one of the teams where he typically didn't have anything to say. It was just, they beat us, and they beat us bad. And that's because they did everything right. And there's not much you can do about that when the other team is running every play exactly the way they're supposed to. And it was them and Rutland, I think, were the two teams where he would walk to the huddle and say, you boys fought hard, and that's it. Let's go practice hard this week.
Yeah, and I mean, that efficiency we talked about with those championship teams was why I laughed last night when I saw that the quarterback, Tim Gettleman, was 4 for 5 passing for 65 yards and 2 touchdowns. He ran the ball a few times for, I think, like 50 or 60 yards. Then Tyler Buxton, 5 carries, 64 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 catches, 62 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like that, between them, they touched the ball 17 times on offense in the first half, and they produced 4 offensive touchdowns. The 5th touchdown came when Tim Gettleman caught an interception and returned it 35 yards for a touchdown, which was when those championship teams, those stars, Ritter, Robinson, Hathaway, you name it, those 4 or 5 really explosive stars, they would just touch the ball and go. So I had to laugh, and it is early, and we won't hype the Tigers any more than we need to. But I think the early returns last night justified Alex Abrahami's preseason rankings, and maybe we can break down sort of what happened last night, Alex. And I was curious beyond that game, from your game, my game, did anything immediately? What struck you as impressive, surprising, or otherwise from the first Friday night of the season?
You know, I think BBA looked impressive. And I know, you know, the Seawolves are in it. They lost a lot of talent off last year's team. They're still combining the two schools, so you should be able to get some athletes. But they're on the younger side.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we kind of knew that going in. I think most of us picked BBA aside from you.
There was a few people that picked the Seawolves.
But I think when you're making the move from D2 powerhouse to D1, maybe there's going to be some bumps in the road. And outside of like a kind of a bad first drive,
mm-hmm.
they look in sync. They look like they knew what they were doing, and they scored pretty quickly. They also had great field position because the Seawolves had some mental mistakes.
Okay.
And the field position got tilted pretty quickly in that game. And then it was just downhill for BBA after that. And by, you know, it was 21-0 at the half, and it was pretty quickly 35-0 in that game.
And then did the clock start running at 35?
The clock started running at 35, and the Seawolves got on the board late in that game during the running time.
Yeah. Burn Burton, the new coach, but sort of looked like same system?
Yeah, it's the same system, that up-tempo spread.
Yep.
It's pretty much, it's the same quarterback. The top receiver is back, John Morgantini.
Yep.
The quarterback is Joey McCoy.
Joey McCoy, who was lights out in his first season under center last year. Although he's, I say under center, that's an old school football term.
Yeah.
When you're running a spread like they do, you're never under center. You're 4 yards behind center.
Except the couple times they were at the one and he sneaked it in.
Okay. Well, that, so that works too.
Yeah.
And it's funny that I always thought of, I mean, and it's, if it's the same system, then it's a basically the from the coaching tree of Chip Kelly, because the former Burn Burton coach, Jason Thomas, coached at UNH for a while when Chip Kelly was the offensive coordinator there. Chip Kelly, of course, went on to a pretty high level of fame running a little school called the University of Oregon's football team, and then coached in the NFL for a couple seasons. New Hampshire guy that sort of innovated that, like, we need to go, or if he didn't innovate it, he took it to the extreme where we want to get to 80 plays. We want to run as many plays as possible, get the tempo moving, had the cue cards on the sideline. Like, they, there weren't a lot of schools doing that, you know, 15 years ago, and more Vermont ties to that coaching tree when Chip Kelly was at New Hampshire as the offensive coordinator. He had a record-setting receiver from Orange, Vermont, Spalding High School, named David Ball.
I think people know that name.
Yeah, they know yes. that name, but it's funny how the you know, what, pick a sport or whatever you want to call it, the sort of circles within circles that you get the these connections that just sort of pop up. And so the game you're watching last night goes back to University of New Hampshire 15 years ago when David Ball was on his way to setting the NCAA career receptions record to beat, I think, a guy named Jerry Rice. Does that sound right?
Yes, but I think it was the touchdown record.
Touchdown record. That was it. Not receptions, yeah. Touchdown.
And just a little background on Burn Burton, just for our listeners. The new coach is Joey's father, Tom McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on Jason's staff for the last 5 years.
Correct.
As the defensive coordinator. And talking to him during preseason, it's like, why am I going to change the offense? I got most of the team back. Or good chunk of it, including the quarterback. Why am I going to change the offense?
Yeah,
and we saw that it works. Personnel is pretty much the same. We're just going to keep on rolling with it.
And he has pretty intimate knowledge of the guy at the controls of that offense too. I think they share a dinner table together. So there's that. Yeah, we're talking Vermont High School football here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. And I got to say, probably my biggest surprise from last night was, not that Brattleboro beat Bellows Falls, because I was, let's call it what it is. I was the only person to pick Brattleboro in that game, but they were down big early.
Like 19-0.
They were down at the Terriers, and then rallied to win 49-26. Monster day for their quarterback, Tyler Millerick. He was 8 of 15 passing for 239 yards and 3 touchdowns. Ran the ball 17 times for 151 yards and 2 more scores. I think he might be a player to watch, Alex.
Yeah, he was on that list that we posted a week or so ago. And if there was one takeaway from Brattleboro's 2018 season, was that Tyler Millerick is one of the best quarterbacks in the state. Even he just played for a very bad team in Division I.
Yeah.
Because he did a lot of special things on the field last year, at least a couple times I saw him, and then talking to coaches throughout the year. Like, he was the one that always stood out. And now that they're down a division, with a good chunk of their returnees back, like we talked about this last night on Facebook Live, on the Free Press site, like, they're an instant contender.
Oh, I think after last night, they might be the favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Bellows Falls would be right there, and they beat them by 23 points.
And Bellows Falls doesn't get beat by that much that often.
And they don't give up a lead like that.
No, they don't. Fairhaven, it sounds like they caught their stride there in the second half. Or found a little bit of something, maybe some inaccuracy woes from the quarterback position last night, but first game under center.
We're not going to discount or knock down Fairhaven too much when they're playing maybe the best team in D1.
That too. And then the game I covered in Milton, there weren't a lot of points, but there were a lot of guys that carried the ball for Colchester. And they got a lot of, they had 3 quarterbacks play. Each of them ran, one of them scored. They had 9 ball carriers total, 49 rushes, 300-something yards, about 7 yards a carry, dominant with the football. I don't think they had more than two plays for negative yardage all night. So they were moving downhill and pretty effectively. When we come back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 Game, it'll be time for Out in Left Field. So don't go anywhere. Don't be scared. We'll be right back.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
And we're back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. The spooky music means it's time for Out in Left Field. I have no idea what's coming, so Aaron, let fly.
All right, here we go. Surfer catches air at a Florida beach, lands on a chomping 6-foot shark.
Whoa.
Yep. All right. A Florida surfer who flew into the air off his last wave of the day unfortunately landed on top of a 6-foot shark. The shark bit four of his fingers on his left hand and his left calf and shin. The encounter at New Smyrna Beach on Florida's central east coast Tuesday was terrifying, but the injuries were not life-threatening. He said, I never really tried to throw an air, but I tried to throw one, the 40-year-old surfer said.
Oh, old surf, bro.
Yeah. He said, I didn't land it. I landed on a shark instead. He told Daytona Beach News Journal that he never did see the shark as he was coming down, but he saw it after the bite happened. He said it felt like a freight train hitting him. And as soon as it happened, he grabbed his board and started to swim as fast as he could. It was a one strike and in waist deep water. I think the shark probably got surprised and bit at whatever landed on its head.
Yeah, I would too.
The guy said that as soon as he's healed up, he's going to be surfing there again. Smyrna Beach, Smyrna County, actually, is the shark attack capital of the world.
Is it?
Yep.
What coast? Is that Atlantic coast or Gulf coast?
It is in Florida.
What? There are multiple coasts right. in Florida, Aaron.
Right. I have no idea, honestly.
let's figure this out. So the water is on the right when you look at the map, which means it's on the Atlantic side.
Yes.
I know you're a master of geography, Austin.
Yeah, I am. Okay.
This is our second geography goof of the week, too.
It's not far from Daytona Beach.
Yes, it's not that far from Daytona Beach.
Okay.
That should have been the giveaway.
24 confirmed bites in 2008, 17 in 2007. That's sort of when they gained their reputation.
Yeah, I've never tried to surf because I'm not good with board sports. I don't have bad balance, but I can just see it going wrong in so many ways. My best friend in the world he lives in New Zealand on the Pacific Ocean, goes surfing just about every day he can. Last time I was there visiting, he's like, we gotta go. I was like, no, I don't gotta go. I don't have a problem swimming in the ocean because usually you can see the fins of the sharks when they're close enough. And you don't go that deep in the ocean because there's riptides and stuff like that. But when you got to like get your butt out there in the water a couple hundred yards to catch the barrels or whatever the surf bros call it, like that's where the sharks are. Sharks in the water. I'm not going to go where they're going, hopefully. So
there have been 4 bites this month and 11 this year. One surfer said, he was quoted as saying, it's pretty sharky out there.
if the water is notoriously sharky, I'm definitely not going there. I can find other water.
Yeah.
Alex, you vacation in Florida just about every year. What's your take on this?
We're in the middle of the state at that point.
Okay, so you're far from the sharks.
We're an hour and a half from the ocean. But I do vacation in Jersey every summer, down in Cape May, the southernmost point of New Jersey.
You go pet the sharks in the water there?
I never see any sharks. They see dolphins every day. And I feel good because they protect the people of Cape May.
That's what you think?
No, dolphins can go after sharks, right? Isn't that what you...
Do they never go after people?
They protect people a lot of times. There's multiple stories of dolphins like...
Oh, okay. So Flipper isn't like totally out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
No, yeah. It's actually really... people aren't really sure why, because it's not...
We're like mammals. We stick together.
Yeah, but it's not really the way like animals usually think. It's usually protecting themselves and self-preservation in general. But for some reason, dolphins sometimes protect people who are stranded in the ocean.
We're warm-blooded. We're in this together. Okay. That's Out in Left Field on Sports Saturday. We'll be right back after this.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
This segment of Sports Saturday is brought to you by Vermont Engine Services, Inc. They've been in business since 1985. They're located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. You can find them online at vermontengine.com. You can call them up if you need them at 802-863-2326. And they're on Facebook. Their hours are 7:30 to 5, Monday to Friday, and Saturdays 8 to noon. So if you're out and about, you can get them for another 53 minutes today. They're a small engine shop. They specialize in engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, flywheel resurfacing. They got mowers. They do it all over at Vermont Engine Services, Inc.
Want to really quickly update our Green City Garage poll question?
Yes, please.
Right now, who should the Red Sox pay? J.D. Martinez, Mookie Betts, both or neither? 33% say Mookie Betts, 67% say both, and neither of the other two options have gotten any votes.
No love for nobody or J.D.
Yes, some people think partial J.D. love for and J.D. Yeah. Mookie. Nobody thinks neither.
Yeah, they're taking my advice.
Yeah.
John Henry spends the money.
I think people forget that not every league in the Big Four is a salary cap league. And so they like assume that you can only pay so much. But really, you can pay whatever you want in baseball. It's just not necessarily the best financial move.
Right. It's the Wild West. There's no restrictions there for how much you want to spend. The luxury tax, is that still a thing? It tells you how much I pay attention.
It is. It is still a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters all that much to well, the
if you're spending $230 million anyway, what's another few million bucks because you spent too much or more than most people? So far on Sports Saturday, we've been talking Vermont High School football. We had Middlebury Tigers coach Dennis Smith on. His Tigers took care of business last night in week one and against Fairhaven, beat them 34-14. Pretty comfy win for Alex Abrami's preseason favorite. Hashed out some of the other games. Alex was at Burn Burton against the Burlington, South Burlington Cooperative last night. BBA rolled off a 35-7 win in their first Division I football game. Not bad for a program that that rebooted 17 years ago, 18 years ago now, and hadn't had a winning record until around 2010. So they are continuing their trend upward. So we've hashed out some high school football. I was at Colchester Milton. Colchester started off their season with a 21-0 shutout win over the Yellow Jackets. And first segment, we dipped a toe into the conversation about the numbers soon to be retired at UVM. No one's really worn them since they were last worn. That would be number 11 of TJ Sorrentine and number 22 of Taylor Coppenrath. It was never a question of, as we said, that if they were going to be retired, it was just when. And finally, Alex, they figured it out.
Yeah, they got the timing set up. They got the date. They got Brown to come here where TJ Sorrentine is an associate head coach. He's been there since 2008.
I think he played a little bit after he graduated, then got into coaching, and yeah, he's a Rhode Island boy.
Yeah.
So he's been back in his home state since 2008 with the Bears. I just couldn't believe they couldn't make it happen sooner, but we'll get that. The date's going to be October 26th. If you have any, I mean, we opened it up there earlier. Didn't get any bites yet, but I mean, it's those two guys have brought more memorable moments for Catamount fans than just about any duo this side of Martin St. Louis and Eric Perrin, the two great hockey players in the mid-90s.
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to hoops, those two are the gold standard for UVM basketball. And, if you have any fond memories, any favorite moments from their impressive run in green and gold, feel free to give us a shout on the phone line here, 802-655-6672 is how you can call in and get a hold of us, or you can text us any of your thoughts on the matter at 802-655-6672. I got to say, I probably beat the horse too much here, but I think my favorite in the non-Syracuse division is the 04 championship game.
I knew you were going to go there.
You did, yeah, you did. Because I call it Taylor Coppenrath's free clinic.
Yeah.
To set the stage for folks that might be a little fuzzy on the memory, Catamounts, they hadn't had Coppenrath for a month. Broken wrist. But they ended up winning their way to host the American East Championship game in 2004. They got University of Maine coming into town. And honestly, it's one of the last times Maine's been relevant in the league. They lean years since then for the Black Bears. But, you know, with Coppenrath hasn't played in a month. It's the first nationally televised sporting event in Vermont, I think, since like the 70s was the...
I didn't know that. That's a good nugget.
Yeah,
that was
sort of the big talking point going in, that it was like some... It's either a hockey game or a boxing match or something like Wide World of Sports thing that had been in like a couple decades before. And so ESPN had never been to Patrick Gym. Like, they'd never broadcast a game from Patrick Gym. They show up. It was still back when they had the goofy sort of paint job on the court. The lights were the old school, like not like the nice lights they have now. They were sort of like the spotlight things that shine down. It was dark. Like, you watched the highlights and it was like dark, and it was like still flash photography from the photographers. But Taylor Coppenrath goes out, his one hand's in a cast, and he puts up 43 points on the Black Bears. UVM rolls. It's the I think it's the conference title game scoring record, matched a couple years ago by Jameel Warney of Stony Brook, but he had two good hands.
Yeah. But again, he did it against Vermont. We were there on Long Island for that performance.
Yeah. You think that I just don't know if I'll ever see anything like that again, where the guy, he could score from long range. He could score from inside prodigiously. But you know, everybody knew what he could do and nobody could stop him. The only thing that kept him from being over eclipsing Eddie Benton as Vermont's leading scorer was that he got hurt. He was a couple games of production away.
Yeah, they're really close.
It's really close. Yeah. And you think the handful of games he missed, that's the difference. I mean, his scoring record was impeccable.
He scored, when I was doing the brief this week for the retirement, he scored, which is a record for a single season, I think it was 774.
Something like that, yeah. Okay, we got Mark in South Hero on the line. Mark, what's going on this morning?
Hey, good morning, guys. Just wanted to share a quick story. Yeah, my kids grew up watching St. Louis and Perrin, but my son, who also plays hockey in college, recently moved out of the house, and we got a bunch of stuff at home, you know, jerseys and whatever. He said, "What one thing do you want?" He said, "I want that basketball that Sorrentine and Coppenrath signed." So I have this old basketball with that whole team that won the league and beat Syracuse with basketball with all their signatures. He said, "I don't want any other stuff. I just want that basketball."
That's a great keepsake. Do you remember roughly when you guys picked that up?
Oh man, it was like the guys sit on at the table and they sign autographs for the kids and all that stuff. So it was before the Syracuse game. Because we went down, actually, we didn't go to the Syracuse game, but we went to the Michigan State game after, down in Worcester. Because everybody dumped their Syracuse tickets so we could get tickets to go to see Vermont play. They play Michigan State after they beat Syracuse, right?
Yep, that's right.
Down in Worcester.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, but it was that season. It was one of the, you know, autograph things, and I just had a basketball, and all the guys signed it, and... You know, so we've kept that as sort of a keepsake. And of all the stuff, and, you know, we got all the hockey guys and all whatever. He said, "No, I just want my basketball." So, anyways.
That's awesome. Thanks for the call, Mark.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you guys later. Thank you.
Yeah, that's, I have a closet full, and I've been hesitant to cull any of the stuff from my closet. I used to collect all these free giveaway t-shirts. They'd toss them up. I had a megaphone that I'd bring to games. And so if I was in the sweet spot of the stands and they threw the t-shirt up high enough, no one could beat my reach with that megaphone in my hands. I just scoop it up, just pick it right, pluck it right out of the air. So I probably, by the time I graduated from UVM, I bet I had a dozen, maybe 15 UVM like free giveaway t-shirts. One of them was the, and I haven't gotten rid of this one. I've gotten rid of a few, but that one they had for the that last game at Patrick Gym, the 05 championship game against Northeastern, was that one's not going anywhere. That's sticking around because that was one of the most fun sporting events I've ever been to, and I got to go to the Syracuse game too, and that was a like an out of body experience being there for that one. But those last two home games, the Northeastern game and then the regular season finale, where I want to say everybody just cried. Like, it started really, really nicely, and it was the unforgettable thing where Coach Brennan would come out, they'd be playing Jackie Wilson said his sort of like his intro music when they'd cue it up at about 3:05, because that's about how long that song takes for folks that aren't acquainted with it. They'd cue it up, he'd exit with the da 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 da, and it like, and so they passed out these the lyrics to the song, and so people were singing along and clapping with the beat. You get 3,000 people clapping in unison is not the easiest thing to do, but everybody knew what to do that night, and including the Catamounts, who managed to take care do their thing as well. Coffin, Wrath, and Sorrentine, no shortage of moments. And as Coach Brennan said on the huddle this week, like they were good, approachable dudes that were, you know, they were about the team, and they were damn good. Like they were good.
They were good, even defensively. I think
they had to be
right.
Those teams didn't play super deep, not like the recent Catamount teams that could go 9-10 deep every night against anybody. The Syracuse game, they only went, I think, 6 or 7 players deep. Then most of those guys played almost the entire game, and then they had to go try and beat Michigan State 2 days later, and they were just sort of gassed. But like TJ Sorrentine, 354,
which is 11
three-pointers. He's 11th all time, and that was 15 years ago, before everybody just started shooting threes by volume. I mean, he was ahead of the curve. He famously, I think, against Northeastern, went 11 for 15 in a 40. I think it was a 45-point night. We could literally sit here all day and talk about these guys and what they did, because it just, I mean, Coppenrath, was it 38 points at Pauley Pavilion against UCLA? I mean, as a junior. Like, he was the reigning first, for the first time, he was the reigning America East Player of the Year, goes to Pauley Pavilion. UVM played well against UCLA that day. I remember catching part of that game on TV, because it wasn't, back then, UVM wasn't on TV all that much. It was hard, like, you either had to go, or you had to get lucky that they were playing a big team to catch them on TV. Now you can watch them from the comfort of your home just about every game.
It was sort of a perfect storm in that regard when you say, like, they sold out every game of their senior year. Now, like you said, you can watch from the comfort of your home on your laptop, or you can, you know, put it up on your TV and not have to go out in the Vermont winters and sit in those great seats at Patrick Gym.
Oh, those are so comfy.
So when the only way to watch them really was to go to the game,
right? And the as Dennis Smith said earlier, the proof's in the pudding. All those sellouts in the 2004-05 season. And I funny, before we get out of the segment here, I got a text a couple days ago, and it was from someone I hadn't talked to in a couple months, and he said, "When are you going to call me about them retiring my jersey?" And them being UVM and his jersey being number 22. And I wasn't quite thinking about it. And then I put it together, and it was former UVM star, Burlington High School coach, Matt Johnson, who was number 22 before Taylor Coppenrath was number 22. Matt Johnson had a pretty good little career of his own there at UVM. He was, the team's first conference player of the year. When he did so as a senior in the NAC. There's been a lot of points put up in that number 22 jersey. And Taylor Coppenrath scored the last of them in 05, which is pretty, that's one of those cool things. You know, you don't really think about, like, yeah, nobody can wear it, but like nobody can ever do anything in that number again.
None.
That's like, that's you, like, and anybody that did it before you, they like Matt Johnson can think about it the same way. Nobody else can score to my jersey. Although, and he even admitted he didn't score 43 points with one hand. So, yeah, that's going to be a fun night. I think it was probably shades of when they named the Patrick Trumbull court for Tom Brennan. We were both there for that courtside. That was maybe probably a little less emotional than that, I'm expecting, but it's still going to be a special night when they unveil the jerseys and hoist them to the sky.
Coach Brennan was, you know, obviously everyone knows him, but he's been at games. He's been at most home games over the last
far more than
years.
He's missed.
Exactly. And Taylor has been to a couple, and Sorrentine hasn't been back really, right? So
no.
Like to get both of them back in the building, that's I think going to kind of raise the emotional level.
Yeah, that's true. And it like the TJ Sorrentine sightings haven't been plentiful in the old barn there up on the hill, but yeah, October 26th, put it on the calendar, not a night to miss, and neither is the rest of the show here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. We'll be back after this.
Now back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
And we're back for Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. If you're just tuning in, I like to think you've missed a reasonably good show so far, guys. We've been breaking down week one of Vermont high school football season. Talked to Middlebury Tigers head coach Dennis Smith in the first hour. We've been chatting UVM basketball with the news that they're going to finally retire the numbers of TJ Sorrentine and Taylor Coppenrath. October 26th is the date for that up at Patrick Gym. I think tickets go on sale reasonably soon.
October 1st.
October 1st. Alex had the information I didn't even know I needed. Those two guys, they really sort of, with Coach Brennan and company, launched the Catamounts into the orbit we get to enjoy now from the sidelines. So that's going to be a special night. And I'm thinking, I mean, football started last night and a soft opening for the other sports, Alex.
Yeah. Soccer and field hockey, volleyball, cross country, invitational, Essex invitationals later today or going on right as we speak.
Currently, right?
Yeah. I think varsity races start at noon.
Okay. Okay. You going to speed over there, lace them up?
No. Retired my spikes.
Okay. Okay. And you were a sprinter anyway, so that's not.
Yeah, this is not
my
season.
You're not an endurance athlete.
No, I guess I'm not an endurance
athlete. No, you're not. Don't even pretend. And it's always funny when teams start the year, because it's like, I mean, it's new year, new everything. But like we had two boys soccer games Thursday. Which is the absolute earliest I think you could play.
I think they got waivers to play. At least Milton, when I talked to Glenn Button, the Milton head coach.
So you get special permission to play.
Because I think he has to move in his daughter, I think, into college on Saturday.
Oh.
And then Friday night they couldn't play because the football team had their opener at home.
Right.
So they got a waiver from the VPA to play a day early.
Yep. Okay. And the other game was BFA against North Country. And actually that makes sense too, because I think the BFA coach told me he has a wedding to attend this weekend. So, mitigating circumstances or whatever you want to call it, you can get that waiver. I haven't checked to see how Jeff Paul's Lakers are doing this morning. Do you want to dive into that?
I'm
my computer is sort of out of my view here. Girls soccer, a lot of games on tap today. More underway, I think Tuesday is going to be a good day for girls soccer. You have the Lakers against defending champion CVU. That's a rematch of last year's Division I girls soccer championship game. We've also been putting out a lot of preseason content on high school sports on burlingtonfreepress.com. You had your not only football power rankings, which we've addressed with Middlebury leading the way there. You've put out some boys soccer rankings. I had girls soccer rankings up yesterday, and probably surprise to no one, I had the CVU Redhawks, who haven't lost since 2016, as sort of my team to beat, considering they're bringing back 8 starters. I think 6 or 7 have been multi-year starters, or maybe all of them. Actually, I think all of them have been multi-year starters, including 6 now juniors. It sounds like they might be a little banged up currently, but if they're healthy, I'm not sure who can play with them. Some people might be able to stop them because it's soccer. It's a funny game. Mm-hmm. You know, you can park the bus and get lucky. I'm looking at CVU as the number one girls soccer team to start the year. South Burlington, I think, is poised for a pretty good year. They had a lot of freshmen last year. Those freshmen are sophomores. They're quite good. They've just had the misfortune of running into CVU in that side of the bracket the last couple of years to end their season shy of the finals. After the Wolves, I have Jeff Paul's Lakers. I think, you know, they're missing some longtime starters, but I mean, they're athletic. They got a pedigree to uphold now. I think, I mean, other than CVU, I don't think anybody's won more games than the Lakers in the last 5 years, which is pretty special there. My fourth team, I'm looking at Burlington. They have 18 returners, most of them juniors and seniors that have been around the block a couple times. Struggled to score goals last year, but if they can find the back of the net, they're going to be right there at the end of the season too, I think. And do you have an update on the Lake Show?
I'm sorry to say I don't. Oh. There's been nothing on their Twitter feeds.
Oh, we should text Jeff. I think it was a 10 o'clock kickoff.
I believe so.
We could have an update on that by the end of the show, as long as it doesn't go to overtime.
Yes.
So let's pray for no overtime, as we usually do in our job. What are you looking at in boys soccer, Alex?
So it's just like on the girls' side at the top for boys with CVU. Defending champ, also went undefeated last year with just the one tie. And they pretty much bring back 9 starters off of last year's championship team. On a team that only gave up, I believe, 3 goals or 4 Ooh. Over the course of the year, and I think only 1 in the run of play. I think there's a PK, and then was a direct kick, I think. And
those
then,
stats all sound familiar.
Okay. And then in the final was the one that they was the run of play goal they gave up, and they actually went down 1-0.
Right.
In that game.
Then they rattled off 4 after that, right?
4 after that, which was like the highest scoring final in 16 years or something like that. So they looked impressive after that, after giving up that first goal, settled the nerves, and then won their first title since 2012. Since 2012. And it was, I think, their 18th, which is just short of Proctor for the most in state history.
Proctor is at 19
I think
now?
They're at 19 because they won last. Did they win last year?
They
no, that was
not.
Arlington sweeps.
Arlington
I'm
won
sorry.
Last year.
But Proctor has won their 19th somewhat recently.
Yes. And the CVU girls won their 18th last year as well. They have the most in Vermont now. They've eclipsed Northfield, who had that record for a long time with 16, but hasn't won in the last few years. Milton is also right behind him at 16 after, you know, they're coming off a four-peat in Division II girls soccer. And I thought, like, we're to dip a toe back into girls soccer for a second, I thought Milton was going to be taking a dip this year because they lost our player of the year, Tatum Chappie, who I believe had 19 goals and 26 assists as a senior. Just an absolute dynamite year, and had the walk-off winner in the D2 final against Rice, the free kick goal to win it all.
Which might be the greatest, I don't know how to describe this, but like the greatest send-off to a career for a high school athlete of any level. Like, that's her last high school kick.
Golden goal.
Is a golden goal to win a champion, not just win a championship, but four-peat.
And right?
It's a four-peat.
Yeah, and not only that, so she was part of all 4 championship teams. And it, like, scoring a golden goal at any point is going to be unbelievably satisfying. But to do so on a dead ball, set piece, free kick, when you do that, like, basically time stops for you. Everybody has to realign themselves and set themselves up. All the people that are watching are just sort of bated breath, like, and you're setting the ball down. You're taking your time. The ball can't start till you kick it. and in the back of the net championship celebration. And those are some great celebration photos because it was gross that day.
Yeah.
Gross. Maybe 40 degrees if we were lucky and just soaking wet cold. It was, I really hope we don't get another championship Saturday like that. But
you know what? For the two of us, because we were nice and warm in the press box at Buckhart Field for both those games, except when we had to go out to do our interviews.
Yeah.
We did not brunt the worst of it.
No, we made out okay, but yeah. I even, you know, when it came time to go out and interview those people, I felt cold looking at the people we were talking to.
And what I think happened too, if I'm not mistaken, after the second game of the day.
So about 2:30, 3 o'clock.
It stopped raining.
Yep.
And I think it might have even warmed up a little bit.
Yep.
Like I think the clouds broke as the VPA was bringing the trophies out to present.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly how it went. They played the games in the worst possible conditions of the day. And yeah, so.
Another reason to blame the VPA.
It's always the VPA's fault, guys. And if you didn't know it, just blame the VPA. They can handle it.
That's a running joke between Austin and I.
Yeah.
We should clarify that we don't blame the VPA for real. It's just more of a, you have to blame someone, so let's blame the organization that runs the
sport. Yeah, they're the big bad out there. Yeah. So so girls soccer, I rattle off my top four.
Yeah.
After that, I mean, I think the top of D1 is going to look very similar to what it has with a metro-heavy situation. It seems like Byron Burton, who's been in the mix the last few years, might be taking a step back. Might not. They have a Division I college player, you know, bound for UMass playing striker. Her name's Grace Pincus. I think she scored 3 goals and set up another one yesterday at St. Johnsbury. So she can play. And they have a good system down there, but I don't know that they'll be at the same level they have been. Division II, I think the early favorites are probably going to be Mount Abraham, who made the semis last year and brings back all of their starters. You have Harwood. They made the quarters. They got upset by Mount Abraham, but they bring back a lot of people, including a true like emerging star named Tatum Nelson, who was a freshman last year, had a great year. And then Milton is going to be right there too. They lost 53 goals between Tatum Shappy and freshman Emma Wenner, who has gone to transferred to prep school. But they still bring back their entire defense and midfield. So they should be okay. Their coach, Chantel Burke, didn't seem too worried. But after CVU on the boys' side, what are you looking at there?
So I think it's pretty similar in terms of, or familiar with the names at the top after CVU. St. Jay, which is lost in the final back-to-back years. I think you have to consider them a team that can reload despite losing some key players. Just because they did it last year. I don't think many people peg them this time last year as a title favorite or contender. And I think they surprised some people and they all of a sudden get back to the final where they lost to CVU. So I think we got to keep them in the mix.
Yeah.
Mount Mansfield, pretty junior heavy. And I think they have some players back off a team that only lost to CVU 1-0 in the playoffs.
Hmm.
So I think they're on a team that could take a big step forward here in 2019. I have them number 3 in the power rankings to start off. And yesterday they actually played Burlington and they tied 1-1.
Okay.
And Burlington's next in line at number 4 in the power rankings.
That's a juicy opener right there.
Yeah.
Don't waste any time getting right into the season.
Well, let's get right to the tie.
Yeah.
You know.
Start off 0-0-1.
Yeah. So Burlington has 25 on its varsity roster.
Ooh,
that's a lot. But like Fran DeMasi, the coach there, says, I think he was telling me they all understand their roles. You know, there's like kind of like a practice team or a group of practice players. So mm-hmm. They kind of know what they're going to do or how many minutes or no minutes they're going to play. And he has like 60-something in the program and they didn't cut anybody. So they got a couple JV teams. So they have plenty of players to pick from. Over there with the Seahorses. My thing with them, I think they're great up the middle, in the midfield and central back. I think the question will be with them is who's going to score and if they can get a balanced attack going. I think they're going to want to push it and maybe counter. But can they kind of stay with CVU? Can they stay with Essex? And Essex is a team that lost like 6 or 7 seniors.
Yeah.
That pretty much played 80 minutes every game. So I put them number 5 with the caveat that they're talented, but a lot of unproven guys on that team. So we'll see what Jake Orr can do as they kind of grow into their new roles.
Yeah. Yeah. If you had a dark horse to come out of the woodwork this year, maybe beyond those top 2 or 3, who do you think it is?
I'll throw some love to Mount Anthony, even though I don't really know who they have back. I think they might be a team out of the South that could do some damage.
Okay.
And then quickly in D2, I think Milton and Stowe, which has won the last 7 Division III titles.
Ooh, yeah.
Is now in D2. I think Stowe and Milton are the co-favorites in Division II. And you can throw a bone to Harwood, the defending champ, as well.
Yeah.
Those 3 teams seem to be like the
7
the front runners.
Stowe, that's a story to watch. I mean, 7 straight state championships.
Which is a record, too.
Which is a record. They've taken the jump. They've taken the leap. They've gone up to D2. And I'm curious. That might be what I'm most curious about this soccer season is how they do once we get to October, November, if they can get to that final day and win it. Because that really says something. It would say something about what they've built the other side of Mount Mansfield. When we come back on Sports Saturday, it'll be time for Hot or Not. Just so hot. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Music is here, and it is so hot right now, Alex. It is time for Hot or Not, Aaron. What do we got?
Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They do not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes that are made from scratch daily. No box mix here, my friends. Make your day superb.
Alex, do you ever get Superb Cupcakes for the fam?
No, I've never been there. Jeff asked me that same question when I was on earlier this summer.
It's a question on people's minds. I think you'd be, you would pretty much sew up Father of the Year with a few months to go if you brought home some Superb Cupcakes at any point this weekend. Just a guess.
Maybe I'll stop by on the way to CVU later today.
Yeah. I mean, shoot. Go. I support you fully. I don't think you can miss. But Aaron... What's the first one? What do you got? What's top of the list for us?
Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, was asked a lot about Ezekiel Elliott's holdout this week, and this is one of the things he had to say.
The whole point that I'm making about all of it, we don't have any movement at all. The same way we look at anything, we'll get ready for the Giants, and if he's not there to Giants, and he comes in the next, or the next, or the next, or we'll use him for the playoffs.
So, my first hot or not.
I love Jerry Jones.
My first hot or not. The Cowboys can afford to wait out Zeke.
No. No. If you're waiting for the playoffs, you have fun not making the playoffs. Like, cool. But by all means, sabotage your own season if you want to. Go right ahead.
No, clearly they can't wait out the contract or Zeke, but I'm all for it.
This one was meant to be a pretty easy one to sort of make a point.
Resident Giants fan,
of course.
Yeah,
playing the Cowboys in Week 1.
Yep. You're already tasting. You're like halfway through putting that W on the schedule, aren't you? You're like on the way up from the bottom of the first V.
Hey, we're undefeated right now.
That's such a Giants answer. What's next?
Just to finish this one off.
Okay.
That's your whole offense there, Jerry, just so you know. You go ahead and let Dak Prescott play without Zeke. Feel free.
Dak has been at his best because Zeke has been good.
Yes. Saquon Barkley is the best back in football. This is according to Saquon himself.
Alex, you take this.
This is hot. Yeah, he definitely is the best running back in football.
In Saquon, we trust?
Of course, yeah. Okay. I think he's, I hate the term, but I'm going to say it anyway because we're in a hot or not segment here.
Yeah.
He's a generational player.
Oh, there we go. There we go. The hype tornado is swirling.
Oh, yeah.
Around.
But I don't think it's just hype, though. No, you saw what he did last year.
He is
against the one of the worst offensive lines in football.
As our boy Jeff Paul would say, Saquon is special.
He's special. And here's a stat that people kind of forget about. He never fumbled last year.
Oh, you know who really loves that? Like in the dark recesses of his mind? Bill Belichick. A guy that good that doesn't give the ball away? If Belichick had a Hall of Fame vote right now, Saquon would be a year one shoo-in. Like that's, you know, that's
he's halfway to Canton already.
That's the stuff dreams are made of. I'll agree, and I mean I think most places Saquon's going to be the number one consensus number one guy for fantasy leagues, just based on, you know, year two and how good he was in year one. Yeah, that's an easy one.
And at this rate, if he's not the best back right now, he will be. Like, he's on track.
And if you're top three, what's the difference at that point? Like,
yeah.
And one of those three is not even playing right now.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, man. Demaryius Thomas will have a comeback season with the Pats. I'll preface this by saying he had a great fourth preseason game. He looked really healthy. That's the important part. He looked very healthy. Clean routes, couple touchdowns. Hopeful Pats fan sitting here.
When we were talking about this before the show, I don't know if you saw the smile on my face, but I was sort of like perking up, sitting up straighter. Alex, you might have been out of the room, but God, I hope so. I'll take this hot. Like I'm just so high. If Tom Brady can have Josh Gordon on one side, Demaryius Thomas on the other, and then Julian Edelman somewhere in between for let's say even say 2/3 of the season. That's a video game waiting to happen.
I'm gonna say hot as well, just because it's the Patriots. But normally, aging receivers are aging for a reason, and they're kind of it's past their prime. But we've seen over the years with the Patriots that it's kind of worked out. Like even with like someone like Josh Gordon, who's not past his prime, he's just had some issues off the field. Randy Moss was kind of needed a bounce back, you know, whatever it was 10, 12 years ago.
But that was late stage Randy Moss.
It was, and he had some bad years in Oakland. It also hasn't worked out. Like, I think Chad Ochocinco was on the Patriots for a season.
Right.
And that didn't work out.
I think the difference there with Ochocinco was a possession guy. He would, like, and he could break plays because he would run great routes and he got a lot of volume. But Thomas was a big play guy. And if you turn a big play guy with a little bit of big playability left in the tank into a possession guy, like that's an effective recipe.
One of the commentators noted that the strength was still there, and I hope he's right. Because if the strength's still there, Demaryius Thomas is so hard to cover with how big and strong he is.
Right.
I mean, he runs great routes, too. So if you do get on him, you have to actually get through him at that point.
Right. And then we get down there around the 10-yard line, and okay, we don't have Rob Gronkowski this year, but we have 6'4" Demaryius Thomas and 6'4" Josh Gordon. I bet we can find a corner of the end zone to throw the ball to.
But to Alex's point, it didn't work out with Reggie Wayne, and he's one of the greatest receivers of all time. So
yeah.
There's fear, but there's definitely hope.
That's a risk I'm willing to take.
Me too.
That's a high risk or low risk, high reward type
exactly.
of situation.
We got him for nothing, so it's pretty good deal.
Love that.
Middlebury will win the Vermont D1 championship this year.
I'm almost contractually obligated to say yes, so I'll say yes. I'm hot on this. I think with the caveat everybody has, if we stay healthy, if they stay healthy, I think they are the team to beat. From what I saw last year and knowing that those guys are all a year bigger, stronger, more mature in the coaching staff they have in charge, I like that.
So I guess I'm obligated to say not. Given my record.
If you ever want Dennis Smith to talk to you again.
But so we have the benefit of knowing what happened last night with how they performed. We don't know how good a team like St. John'sbury is because they're going to kick off in about, you know, an hour or so.
Right. And we do have some juicy games today.
We do. But if I put them number one in my preseason rankings, that means I think they're the best team in the state now.
Yep.
With all the returnees they have back, with the coaching staff that we mentioned, I think, yeah, that's hot. I think they're going to win come November.
Okay.
I don't know how to word this one. I've tried it like six different ways. I'm still not happy with it. Basically, Andrew Luck got a bad... He was treated wrong this week. So you can word that however you want. Basically, Andrew Luck's in the right in this whole retirement situation. Hot or not.
Hot?
Yeah.
It's Andrew Luck's life. And, you know, kudos to him for having the perspective to not have his entire life revolve around and or be destroyed by football. I think the part of my take guys had it great this way. Like, he's the reason that draft prospects get shamed for being smart, because they might think about themselves or things beyond just the football and the team, like where most guys might do so to their detriment. These guys have a head on their shoulders that knows it's not about, you know, just football. So Andrew Luck has made his money. He's a smart guy. The world is his oyster still. Anybody that's holding it against him, like, that's, come on, it's his life, it's his body.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, especially when once you watch his press conference immediately following that preseason game last Saturday night, you can kind of see that he was in, or not see, but like, you could see like the pain that he was kind of in, like this, the emotional toll it took on him.
Yeah.
He was in an injury cycle for four straight years.
Yeah.
And there were various injuries. I mean, some of them you might think they're not like overwhelmingly major, except for that, I think he had the shoulder surgery at some point.
Yeah.
And missed the entire 2017 season. And just to always be in that cycle and never getting right, I think, and then realizing he's already made how many millions of dollars?
Oh, a lot.
And he's 29.
More than you and I, at least.
He has a young family. I think, you know, we should respect that. Now, from the fans' perspective, I think, I don't condone the booing, but I think when it was in the moment, they're finding out on their phones as it's happening.
Yeah.
I think their reaction was, the season is 10 days away or 2 weeks away.
He hung them out to dry.
We lost our franchise quarterback in a season where it looks like they're a lot of people's preseason favorite. So yeah. I think that's when Toronto fans were booing Kevin Durant's injury. Like, that was it. That was completely wrong, but it was only like a group of fans in the moment thinking that now we're going to win the NBA championship because Kevin Durant is hurt again.
Right. And you think, I mean, what's Andrew Luck's 29?
Yes.
So if he's spent the last 4 years just, you know, unhealthy, unwell, trying to be well, that would be like spending one day out, like that's about 15% of his life, 18% of just like the time he's been on earth, he's been hurt in the NFL. That would be like having one day out of the week where you just feel awful. It would be nice to have seven nice days a week, frankly. So I'm on board with Andrew Luck.
That was one of my big things, is what makes Colt fans think that if he hadn't retired, he was going to save their season? How do they know he's not going down again week two? I mean, the guy's got health issues, clearly. He is injury prone. I don't think he saw an end in sight. I don't think any reasonable fan would have. And you cannot fault people for making the right health decision, especially when it's someone who, like he said, and like you guys said, has been in a cycle. This isn't a one-off. This is kidney laceration, concussion, arm injuries, leg injuries. It's been taking a toll on his life. He even said it was affecting his mental health to the point where he had to make a decision between the two. And if I was him, I'd pick the one where I remember who I am at 55.
Well, and to a degree too, the Colts put him in that position by the amount of hits he took his first few years in the league, because they had an offensive line that was, you know, held up about as well as like a leaky strainer. Like, it was just awful. But my immediate thought after I heard this was like, remember like that great debate between when at draft time, when he was coming out, wasn't it him and Robert Griffin III?
That sounds right.
Right?
That's right.
They were the same year.
I think so.
And people thought Robert Griffin III went down and he was sort of unrealized potential there. It's a reverse hypothetical or whatever you want to call it, but like, would the Colts like to have had Robert Griffin III now? I don't know. Just one of those weird, the way both those careers sort of stalled and didn't, you know, reach their full potential. It's tough.
Yeah. I don't understand the timing. That is the one part where I would like to understand why he chose that timing. Because I think that's a big part of why the fans were upset, is how late into the preseason it was, but you can't fault a guy for making the right health decision.
Yeah.
Or you can, but it's a jerk move.
Yeah.
That's hot or not.
Okay, cool. When we come back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game, we'll be putting a bow on the show, riding off into the weekend. Alex is going to be covering some football. I'll be covering some football. And then we might get a couple days off. How about that? Oof. Love that. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Hey, we're back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Coming in for a landing, our boy Aaron's at the controls there in the flight tower, bringing us in. Alex, how's your flight been?
Smooth.
Yeah? Entertaining?
Yeah. I'd say entertaining, too.
Yeah.
No bumps.
No bumps. Real smooth. No turbulence. Except for that time Aaron sort of, like, cut out your mic for, like, a half a second.
Yeah, that's what I get for dancing to Jay-Z.
It happens. It occupational hazard.
Dance around controls, probably.
So, rattle off what we've done. We've talked some football, talked some Middlebury Tigers, talked a good bit of UVM hoops, talked some high school soccer. Because, you know, I don't know if people knew this, but high school sports are back. We got them for another 10 months before we get to enjoy summer again. I got to say, I'm a little bummed at the weather forecast here. I wanted to play some golf Monday, but if it's going to be crummy, that's no bueno. What do you got planned for after today, Alex?
After today?
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to relax. I don't have anything major planned.
Not going to labor on Labor Day weekend?
No.
Nice. Aaron, what do you got planned?
Oh, not much. I'm going to be here probably most of the weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do we got for the poll question right now?
All right, Green City Garage poll question. Find them at greencitygarage.com or at greencitygaragevt@gmail.com or 49 B Commerce Ave, Unit 5. Our poll question, who should the Red Sox pay? Mookie, JD, both or neither? Final vote, Mookie Betts 38%, both 50%, neither 13%. A couple people don't want to pay any of them.
Okay, that's a late-breaking development there. That's cool. Less people want to pay them both. That's this just in. Alex, you're going to be headed to the Berg?
Yeah, CVU's hosting Rutland.
Week one, Red Hawks, Raiders.
And you're going to Jericho.
I'm going to Jericho. First game for the defending champ Cougs. They got the Bob Whites in their opening game.
Alex, if you get the chance, tell Coach Ron Aaron Wells says hi.
I will.
Thank you. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he is.
I think he's very well liked over at CVU.
Fantastic guy.
I think that's a good hire for them. You know, get them back rowing in the right direction together, and you know, trying to get going where they want to go with that program.
He had a funny line to me when we did the story when he got hired. I'm going to paraphrase. I don't remember exactly, but he's like, "I was everyone's favorite uncle. Now I'm dad."
And dad has some tough decisions to make sometimes, as you know.
Yeah.
Even if he has to be a little harder on the kids, there's no better role model out there for that program than that guy.
That's good to hear. Our boy, Jeff Paul, no word from him on the Lake Show. Haven't seen a score update from their game against Rutland. We'll find out at some point. Jeff always reports. So, I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say we're probably looking at a 2-0 or a 3-0 Lakers win.
Oh.
They got the best goalie in the state in Olivia Moore. So if I'd be shocked if Rutland put one by him. I'll say that. So sports today, days off tomorrow. We're back next week for Sports Saturday. I think we'll have the usual flight crew for that show. Coming up today, 101.3 The Game, we got the Sox at the Angels at 8:05 and also tomorrow at 3 o'clock. This is Sports Saturday. See you next week.
When it comes to sports, one station says it all. WCPV Essex Burlington Plattsburgh. All sports. 101.3 The Game.